This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
I'll tell you, these are the analyses from you-know-where in trying to figure out what happened here, aren't they?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, we got a bigger report back from the Australian lab that came back. I mean, I've got to say that both reports, the summaries of those reports, exactly as we got them, as we received them, minus the backstory, because obviously that's the book, so people don't need to have that, they've already got that, minus the backstory, the reports in full, in detail, are at the end of the book. So there's quite a bit more to it than what I've said on air, so it's well worth getting hold of the book, having a look at the analysis, and seeing if it's anything that anybody out there recognises, you know, and can tell us any more about it. But then the detailed report that came back from Australia and some additional information we got from America and some other information, which we're now gradually, I hinted at this at the beginning of the interview, there's some additional information now that we're pursuing, has, if anything, just complicated an already difficult investigation. I shall glide seamlessly into the next bit of information for you. We did a Freedom of Information request for the nearest Air Force base to the site, to the crash site, for that particular period of that particular year. And basically all it says in the book is we did that and we drew a blank. That essentially is the truth. But at the end of the Freedom of Information Act, it actually says, but there are also a few other air bases that may have been involved in this that you may be able to contact. And it gives, I think it's about three or four other addresses. And then, of course, there's the local police. Now, they should have logged it as an incident. So that's one of the angles that we're pursuing. Nobody else other than you guys knows that, because that's only arisen extremely recently. But it's likely because of Christmas and New Year and the speed at which the military machine rolls, we're not likely to get any results back from some of those till the new year. So it's going to be a case of holding our breath. Personally, I'm not hopeful. I don't think anything's going to come of that. But back to where we came in, subject of disclosure, you never know, in a different atmosphere, different time, different place, they might actually, you know, hold the hands up and go, yes, it was one of ours, but doubtful, rather doubtful. There's another angle as well that we're pursuing. Having got the material, we are looking for comparisons. So we are sort of going, as it were, slightly outside of the military and the ordinary avenues of investigation to see if we can actually locate anything from that time period that comes even close to what we've got. And I can't give too much away, but it's that seems to be more productive and it seems to be more interesting in terms of having a look at things. We've got some kind of stray matches. A couple of bits of stuff seem to look a bit similar to what we've got, but nothing that you can actually pin down. You know, yes, they're using aluminium foam nowadays. They've developed that. That's gone off down certain avenues. But the other stuff, the lanthium, no, complete mystery. Absolutely no idea where that's taking us. We've not had any matches at all for that at this point. But, you know, I'm determined. I'm an archaeologist and I'm a researcher, and it'd be great if I could actually say, yes, it's off one of these particular models of stealth fighters, you know, and I want to nail it completely, you know. And even then, so let's assume that we do nail it completely and we can show you a picture of what this stuff's come off. Where did it come from? What was it doing flying around the skies in 1983 when it shouldn't have existed? You know, we're still not at the end of this one. definitely not at the end of this one. I said to the publisher, I emailed him earlier as a bit of a, talking about Christmas stuff and what have you, and I just said, you know, it's the gift that keeps giving. You know, we just, I don't think we're going to see a quick end to this. So what I would say, I mean, don't be put off, listeners, please don't be put off about this from buying the book. I would actually encourage people to buy the book now, because it's a brilliant time, super duper time to join the adventure. You know, jump in now, sit there on the veranda with a cup of cocoa. It'll only take you a couple of hours to get through this book, maybe 3 hours at the most. Have a look at what's in there, talk to your friends, you know, see what people know. Anything that people find out, you know, send us the information, let us know so that we can see where we're going with this. And again, and I'm going to sort of end this little section on this, the same material, the little beads of metal, Metal Detectorist recently found the same type of aluminium foil, which again hasn't been analysed, but there's a matching piece of that that's come off the crash site at Roswell. So we're back to where we started. If we've got the same crash, the same playbook, the same material, the same stuff over here, then maybe, just maybe, the same thing happened at Roswell. So it kind of feeds back across the Atlantic. So I think it's great. I think this is a fantastic adventure. Like I say, now is the time for people to jump in and kind of become a part of this and, you know, get stuck into the book. Really is a good point to join it. We thought it was going to be an end, but it's not. It's just another beginning.
Now, in terms of Roswell, we don't have any comparable analyses of material from 1947. I mean, if we did, it would be even weirder than what you're reporting, because that would be decades before they would have been widely used or even used on occasion.
Yeah, absolutely, completely. I mean, if I run through some of the parallels, you know, crash in the middle of nowhere, all the stuff's disappeared, you know, part of the cleanup. One farmer was the only witness to all of this. Good old Matt Brazel, though, he managed to, according to himself, he managed to recover some fragments, stick them in a case and hide them in his house before he died. Now, that case has never been found, but the case we've got of fragments over here, that has been found and we've got them. In terms of analysis, obviously the archaeologists from the National Geographic, they had a look at the material they had. They couldn't really say what it was. Only we're talking tiny little beads of melted metal. But that in itself is as mysterious as the fact that we can't really nail down the material we've got over here. We can say what's in it, but we can't say what it is. Then, a couple of weeks before the book went into print, you had this Metal Detectorist putting a photograph up on, I think it was on one of Philip's sites, of a piece of this same foil from Roswell. So then you have got that same thing going on. I mean, in the book, there are parallels that Gary has come up with. He came up with about four or five A4 sheets of parallels that are the same. You know, the one newspaper article that appeared in the Roswell Daily Record on the day and the day after, then it vanishes. You know, the same thing happened over here. So there are dozens of other things as part of the same playbook. But it certainly then feeds into Roswell. And as you rightly say, was that technology in 1947, was that something to do with what the Germans developed in the Second World War? Is it an outcome of Operation Paperclip? You know, where did that go? Or is it the other way round? Was it that particular operation that then got hold of this alien technology and started making use of it? Fast forward a bit further, you know, and 1970s, 1980s, is that where our vehicle comes from? Are we looking at the end of a developmental arc that started as early as the 1940s, you know? Fascinating questions. And, you know, for me, it's brilliant. I don't know whether it's the archaeologist in me, but I the chase is better than the catch, you know? So at the moment, we're right in full chase, you know? We're really going at it at the moment to try and see where this takes us. So I can't wait. I can't wait to see where we end up. It'd be very disappointing if we don't get anywhere with it, but, We will. We'll make a few more steps, at least, I think. But as you rightly point out, you know, like I say, this technology, is it ours? Is it theirs? Or is it something in between?
Well, of course, one of the stocks in trade of some of the Roswell stories is that we got a hold of alien craft. We were able to reverse engineer some of the technology, which I do not believe in. The book is called Europe's Roswell. It's not a big book, okay? It's 99 pages. So you can get through it, as you said, in 2 or 3 hours, depending on your speed if you're reading. We've got Mark and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Most folks don't realize this fact. Our country is only 4 missed meals away from chaos, and those meals can vanish fast. In a national emergency, fragile supply chains break down and will wipe grocery store shelves clean in a matter of hours. Before this happens, there's something you should do today. Let's stock up on emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply is the company millions of American families trust for their emergency supplies. You should, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each kit contains delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and other survival necessities. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship the same day, fast. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. Those who know what's coming, prepare before the chaos starts. MyPatriotSupply.com.
If you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play it again.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track, not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We explore Europe's Roswell, the analyses of material supposedly recovered. The question here is whether the Roswell episode produced similar material back in 1947. But the third question is, would that material provide for a more advanced structural integrity situation on aircraft? Does it make them more impervious to harm, better able to fly through space? What?
Very, very good question. That is a very good question, because we have obviously had quite a bit of time to sort of look into this. I will give you how I think this material was used. Looking at it as it is, I'm going to do this layer by layer. The green non-aerodynamic paint, British Aerospace said that's never been on the outside of an aircraft. It's got no aerodynamic quality whatsoever. So clearly that's the interior surface. And that is coated onto the aluminium. So the aluminium foam, therefore, must be the internal surface. The grey resin, then, that is again on the aluminium, is what joins on the foil, the hexagonal foil. So the bulk of the solid shape of whatever it is you're looking at is made up of this aluminium foil core. So already you're looking at a lot of strength and a great deal of lack of weight. You know, there's no weight in this thing at all. The next thing you hit then, when you get through the foil, will be the next layer of resin, which then glues the foil to the next piece of metal, which is the lanthium, the lanthanum. And what's interesting about the lanthium is when you bombard it, when you try and look at it under, say, an electron microscope or, you know, examine it, it pushes back, it distorts. So it's still got some kind of live quality to it. And then if you go to the outer coating, which is where this rubberized hexagonal material is, that is very similar. It's very indicative of stealth technology. So I would have said that's the outer shell. So what you've now got is a structure. Most of the pieces are either concave or convex, depending on which way you look at them. So it's clearly come off something that is curved. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Once you apply that technology, so let's say that's the outer shell of something, clearly that something, it has a specific design. It's either going to be under extreme pressure or it's used under extreme speed. You know, it's got a particular function. Hitting trees is not its function. It goes outside of what it was designed to do. So this thing's glided through this forest, and basically it's been battered. It's been bombarded by these impacts, a lot of them. And basically it shattered the material like eggshell, because it can't push back. Now, we know the lanthium has this ability to push back. It can do it in a number of different ways, but it couldn't resist the forces that were being impacted on it by the trees. So all of whatever was the bottom of this thing's just got smashed off, and that's how it's ended up scattered all the way across these fields. It's probably about 25 foot wide, whatever it is. It's probably at least double the depth of whatever the shape in the forest was. So working with the shape of a flying saucer is not out of the question. It could easily have been that shape. So that kind of speaks to possibly its use, its function, how it ended up where it ended up. Gary, when he came to cut up the pieces of metal, he noticed that if he stamped on it or hit it with a hammer or really went at it, you know, with the cutters or with a saw, he wasn't getting anywhere with the material. He couldn't break it up for the key rings. But then when he actually got hold of it with a set of metal snips and just sort of wiggled it slowly, it began to fracture, and he could take pieces off it. So it is very, very clearly not designed to stand impact, which, again, is it or isn't it? You know, if it was something alien that wasn't designed to do what it did, that would perhaps take you in one direction. But then if it was man-made, it does ask the question, well, why wasn't it better made? Why did they not consider the possibility that this could impact on something? You know, there isn't a simple answer to that. But that's where the technology goes. That's where we're at with the material that we actually have. It does somehow all join together, and it is part of a bigger jigsaw puzzle. We know, for example, that duralumin's used on the control surfaces for fighter aircraft, the ailerons, the wing flaps, the tail flap. Very often you'll find duralumin there. Whether or not this material is another form of control surface is very, very hard to tell. That's the kind of thing we're trying to find out. That's where we're going to go this next year, you know, and really push into it. And hopefully we'll get a result.
Well, the imperfect nature of some of this does read more as a possibility of something that we experimented with.
Yeah, or it was never expected that it would end up, how can I put it, materializing in a forest. You know, I've got this image, I'm being very imaginative here, of, you know, two little alien fellas sat in a big disc with a dome on top, and all of a sudden they go, boom, you know, come out of the clouds like you see in the movies, you know, there they are, there's this big disc. Oh, beggar, there's a forest in front of us, you know, bang, 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 bang. That clearly, whatever it was out of its comfort zone. Or was it just that, like you say, some military drone operator, you know, lost control when he spilled his coffee, you know, and it ducked a bit too low. And that was the end result. Honestly, don't know. I really don't know. It could go either way. In every interview I've done to cover this book, you know, when people have sort of asked me to my face and they've said, you know, what do you think it is? I am literally 50-50. I, at this point, do not know whether it's one of theirs, one of ours, or something in between. I really, literally don't know. I'm half and half, you know. But it's nice to think that even aliens make mistakes.
Well, you know, they didn't pay enough latinum for development, so it just didn't work, that's all.
The result of the lowest bidder.
That's what I say. That explains why we have crashes of UFOs if we do. That the lowest bidder was involved, because one would think if they're traveling umpteen whatever light years and not through a wormhole or whatever, but whatever it is to get here from a far distance, they would send something that's reasonably resilient. And if they have a culture like we do in terms of profit and loss, not like the idealized Star Trek structure where... Where in Star Trek for the voyage home, Captain Kirk didn't have any money with which to pay for bus rides or for pizza.
Yeah, those damn Ferengi get everywhere, don't they, as well? So, you know, they came for a cow and ended up losing the ship.
Wow.
Oh, dear.
I tell you something, though. Speaking of Star Trek, Deep Space Nine with the Ferengi with stars... The guy who played Quark, Armin Shimerman, is one amazing actor. Just being able to talk with that, all that crazy makeup and the teeth and everything shows a great, great ability to withstand punishment.
Yeah, I know I take the mickey a lot out of the Star Trek syndrome, you know, the way they did things back then. But like you say, you know, budget considerations aside, the actors just pulled it off so well. You know, to actually be able to communicate any emotional, you know, visual emotion through that amount of prosthetics is quite an achievement.
We got more achievements to make here with Mark, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Pentecost.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
USA News Update. The Christmas holiday weekend arrives, but with the added specter of war in the Holy Land. Ryan Daniels has more.
Israeli forces were beginning to slowly push into central Gaza Friday, with heavy artillery bombardment and airstrikes reported. Since the October 7th murder of more than 1,300 Jews at the hands of Hamas terrorists in Israel, the death toll for Palestinians has topped 50,000 amidst the IDF's retaliatory invasion.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is now putting its support behind newly softened language in the U.N. Security Council resolution. It calls for new humanitarian aid corridors, close monitoring of them, and a commitment to working toward a lasting cessation of hostilities. Residents in the Midwest and the Northeast may find their dreams of a white Christmas dashed this year. According to forecasters, the remaining patches of snow on the ground in those regions are expected to disappear by Christmas Day on Monday. Skip Kelly, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
You know, I will say one thing here. I've been watching, for the third time, episodes of the early 2000s series Farscape, which mixed live actors with puppets made by Jim Henson. I think the acting in there was really, really good. Surprisingly good. And, of course, the situation's wild, outrageous. But if you go to the core acting ability of the key players, it was pretty darn good. Tim, I'm sure you have a vast number of questions, so begin the vastness.
Well, I'm amazed at the amount of debris that was left behind in this incident, and yet whatever it was that was involved managed to get out of there. So how much, and I know a lot of it was picked up and collected and you know, carted off, never to be seen again, but was there any kind of estimate on how much debris was actually left behind, and any speculation on if this was a man-made aircraft of some kind, how it managed to limp away?
Well, that was something that we ran across when we did the early documentary, because obviously I went out to look at the fields. People have said, you know, why didn't you show us the fields in the documentary? Well, actually we do. There's a shot at the beginning of the documentary, and it's a panning shot, but it's white sheep on white fields in the middle of winter, with the sun out in a white sky, you know, and it does not look good on camera. It doesn't translate at all. But actually, the four sheep fields total up to probably the size of a football pitch. Mm. You know, so it's a fair-sized area. And when Erwell said it was covered, as I said, some of the sheets that he described, away from the newspaper article, were 2 metres, 6 feet sheets. And there was a few of them. And, you know, clearly there was a lot of debris concentrated where this thing had exploded out of the forest, obviously from the top, and all the wood and the timber and the trees and the bits of other stuff that it had picked up, that all got exploded across the first field. But then the rest of it, there's just tons of it everywhere. That's why Erwell thought he'd had a plane crash, because he looked at what was covering the fields and estimated there was enough there for a fairly significant aircraft. So you're probably not looking at something the size of a Boeing 747, but certainly there was enough there for him to get the authorities involved, because there was an awful lot of debris. And then you get to somebody like British Aerospace in this original report. They actually said to Gary, they said, you need to go back and find something with a cockpit and engines sticking out of the ground. They actually put that. That was the kind of language they used. And they said, you know, we have no idea what is capable of losing that amount of debris and flying off. So, needless to say, we included that in the documentary. So there are a lot of unanswered questions. You know, we're not just relying on one or two little threads of evidence. You know, by the time you start to look at it in, you know, the big picture, things really start to stack up. Yeah, when you start looking at the big picture and you look at all the evidence, things, you know, really start to stack up. You know, there's just a tremendous amount of unanswered questions.
Of course, during that time, 1983, there was all kinds of black budget, top secret aircraft research being done. But you know, you had mentioned at some point, could it have been a stealth aircraft? Could it have been a drone? But I mean, the drones that we have today were really just a dream still in 1983, at least, you know, as far as I know. And if they did have drones, they were small, nothing capable of producing that kind of debris field if it did run into the tops of a forest.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the best measurement we've got is the estimate of the cutting. And if the cutting through the top of the trees is 20 to 25 feet wide, then either that's the wingspan or that's the lower part of the fuselage that hit the trees. But then if it's the wingspan, then there's not enough material in the debris field for just wings alone. So, like, if that's how big the plane is, so you imagine a plane, you know, 25-foot wingspan, that's only going to create enough debris for a field, or maybe two fields at the tops. But this did four fields, and the forest, and there was still enough of the plane to fly off. So you're looking at a huge thing, you know, even some of the modern-day stealth bombers and the stealth fighters would struggle to create a debris field on that scale. And the technology and the metal formula and everything that's going on here, it's just completely wrong for that time period. You know, had it been late 90s going into early 2000s, yeah, I could have accepted that. That's, you know, fine. But you're talking about something here that was probably developed from the mid-70s up to 1980-81, because the development period for any kind of technology is quite long. You know, it can be 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, it can even be 10 years, you know. So you're talking about a long development period before it even gets into the sky. Now, this thing was flying, it was up there, and it was doing whatever it was it does in 1983. So you've got to look all the way back. You know, you've got to say, well, what were they developing in 73, 74, you know, 75, that could possibly fit the bill? Then you're also looking at other factors like, okay, what did the US have over here in terms of technology then? What was stationed here and what were they experimenting with? What did the British have back then? What did we have in terms of technology? What were we experimenting with? So you're going into unknown territory in that sense. But the people I've spoken to, and the people that Gary spoke to, people at British Aerospace, other people involved in the aerospace industry, people who are connected to the military, absolutely none of them have the foggiest idea what this stuff is. Or if they do, they're still sworn to secrecy. They're still not saying. I'm not going to say who, but we did speak to somebody very, very recently who was actually RAF, was a pilot, and was flying around the time of this crash. Obviously, this person is still, you know, sworn to absolute secrecy. They were allowed to comment on certain aspects of what was going on in terms of stealth technology, and that kind of sort of got us wondering whether the debris was something to do with that. But other than that, you know, they couldn't really pass comment or identify any of the other material. So it's still a mystery. And that's official.
As well, though, if this was a conventional aircraft, albeit a top secret aircraft, you know, there were chunks of metal and you know, things like that left behind, but no wiring, no chunks of glass, pieces of rubber, things that you would normally find with a conventional aircraft.
Yeah, the rest of the debris was definitely missing. Pretty much the only thing that anybody remembers, anybody at all, and the only thing that appeared in the original newspaper article, is the comments about this vast sea of metal debris. So clearly, you know, the aluminium foam, the lanthium, and the metallic foil, that is the bulk of the debris. In the newspaper article, there's a mention of something that looks a bit like a girder that might have had some writing on it, and then possibly something else that looks like an aerial. But there's even a mystery there, because for the documentary, we went back to the chap who wrote that article, Andrew Chapman, at the Sunday Express.
Let's continue with that article and more with Mark, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll-free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
This is James Fox, director of The Phenomenon and Moment of Contact. You're listening to The Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
You were mentioning an article there that was written by a particular individual. Mark, tell us more.
Well, it was the article that was sent to Gary from the Clippings Agency, The Strange Debris from the Sky. It was written by a chap called Andrew Chapman. Needless to say, fabulous. We're going to, you know, we'll pursue him as a source. So when we were doing the documentary in 2008, the researchers contacted Andrew. And Andrew said, oh, yeah, he said, I keep all my notebooks. He said, I've still got my notebooks from the 1980s. He said, give me a few days and I'll go back and I'll have a look and see where that story came from. So sure enough, a couple of days later, we get a phone call and Andrew's like, you're just not going to believe this. We're like, oh, why is that? He said, well, I've gone back to my notebooks and they don't tell me where the story came from at all. He said, it would appear that we came back after the New Year break. So we came back after the New Year holiday, which I think was around about the 3rd or 4th of January. And somebody was going round the office handing out stories that needed writing up. So he thinks, Andrew thinks, that somebody handed him the story and said, could you write that up for us? Which he did. And that's how it found its way into his notebook. But he said the source, the actual source for the story, we don't know. So I've always speculated that it was something that was leaked, in effect, by either somebody in the police team or somebody in the Air Force team. I think somebody somewhere, or even possibly the local press, maybe somebody in the local press got hold of it. But that'd be a bit strange because the local press never ran the story. Nobody else ran the story. So that then makes it a bit hard to understand where they beam with some writing on it and the aerial comes from. When I spoke to Erwell, he didn't remember either of those things being in the crash. So, you know, in some ways, the inconsistencies actually prove the truth of what we're dealing with. If everything just added up and it was all the same and there was no, you know, contradictions or inconsistencies, you'd just assume the entire thing was made up. But there's so many little bits and bobs that are different that don't quite fit in. But certainly there's no engines, there's no structure, no rubber tyres, like you say, no wires. You know, if the wings got knocked off, where's the rest of the wing? You know, there's no cockpit, there's no controls. There was a point where we wondered if this rubbery, this green rubber thing was electrically conductive. Maybe it just acted like a huge circuit, intelligent circuit, on the outside of the craft. So you could send signals down it like a giant circuit board and send those signals anywhere. We even theorise that might be the case at one point, but the analysis we've got thus far doesn't seem to indicate that, that's a possibility. But very strange. How on earth anything can function without all the rest of it, you know, and nothing else has turned up? You know, there is no crashed vehicle anywhere, as far as anybody can tell.
Looking at one of the pieces of debris and photographs that you've got in your book, and I'm referring to page 36, two fragments of the foil honeycomb. Now, of course, I'm just basing this off of these photographs, yep. But the top piece reminds me, and especially during the holiday seasons, you know, when you're getting a lot of material that's packed, there is a type of cardboard that is used to protect an item that it's like honeycombed, and it's fairly, and my descriptions are you know, wholly inadequate, but it's like honeycombed, and then with a flat cardboard on the top and the bottom, and it's made to absorb impacts. Mm. The middle honeycombed parts of the cardboard would, you know, crumple and absorb any of the force. And that picture reminds me a lot of that type of cardboard.
Hey, folks, we're going to have a cardboard spaceship. Hey, you know, it almost reminds me of some of the toys I used to buy when I was a kid. They had these cardboard spaceships that you would assemble from cardboard, and then you'd be able to enter it and pretend to be flying your spaceship. Of course, they were so badly built that it would last for about 3 days before you'd have to order another one.
I think possibly the best view of that piece of foil, because it's the same piece of foil, there's only one of each piece, is possibly on page 34, because if you look at that photograph, you realise that it's much thicker at the front. I think it's about 3 or 4 centimetres thick at the front, and then it narrows quite severely to probably less than half a centimetre at the back. And also on that particular photograph, you can see that there are chambers, literally thousands of chambers inside there, which are honeycomb shaped. So that's quite, you know, that gives you a good idea of what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And then the blown up photograph that you're referring to on 36, the bottom photograph, which clearly shows it as being, like you say, crumpled foil chambers. It's like a long sliver of that comes off the site at Roswell that this metal detector chap found. It's that particular specific type of material. But I don't know. Both me, Gary, and everybody else that's looked at this thinks that it is packing. It's not designed to take an impact, I can assure you. The metal's fabulous. It's like armour plating. Okay, it's the metal itself that is the metal that acts as armour plating. So it's thought by most of the experts that this honeycomb substance gives the body of the vehicle its shape and its substance without significantly adding any weight to it. So there's no strength in the honeycomb foil. The strength is all in the metal. Are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tim.
We're still there. So, I mean, if you were to, and you probably haven't done this, you know, because this is a valuable piece of material, but I just wonder, you know, if you were to press down on top of the flat part of that, would then the honeycomb material compress slightly and absorb the energy?
You fully should ask that, because I can pass comment. There's a photograph on page 44 of the case, the actual case that contains the fragments, which is interesting because that actually does give you some kind of scale. And the biggest fragment that Gary recovered is in that case. And when you look at it, you can quite clearly see that it's convex, you know, mm-hmm. It curves upwards. Well, when Gary had that, one of the things he did do was put it on the floor and stamp on it. So, funnily enough, I call it the stamp test. you know, the sheet metal, not the foil, because I presume the foil, like I say, is not designed to take impact, but the sheet metal, and that's a huge piece of lanthium. That's the biggest piece he's got. That, when you stamp on it, pushes back. Hmm. So you can stamp on it, and there's a tiny fractional amount of give in it, but it's impossible to flatten it or to bend it. Even the aluminium foam, Gary attempted to fold that, and it took an enormous amount of effort just to put a crease in it, because he wanted to put a line in one end of it so he could cut along the line. So this metal stuff is pretty indestructible, but clearly not the foil.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, that being said, then, the impact of this crash must have been tremendous in order to get this kind of debris.
Well, it's like I said earlier on in the interview, it might not be necessarily to do with the force of the impact. It's more to do with the nature, mm-hmm. the nature of the impact. I mean, let's face it, you can't get anything more random than a tree. If you smack into a tree, especially if you go low enough down the trunk, you are dealing with some extraordinarily strong forces. You know, trees can bend and stand gale force wind and all sorts of things. And some of these trees were snapped. Some had been stripped of the bark and stripped of the branches. Some of the smaller trees had been knocked over and uprooted. So the crash impact itself was quite considerable. But I suspect it was low speed. So you're talking about low speed, low velocity impacts, just a lot of them. So literally it kind of just battered away the bottom of this craft, cracked everything up, broke everything. And then, of course, as soon as the craft then tries to continue, you've then got the rush of air. It's no longer aerodynamic. So whatever it is that's been cracked and broken and impacted and hit, that's all going to get torn off the minute it tries to exit the scene. That clearly seems to be what has happened.
We'll find out more of what's happened with Mark Holly, Gene Steinberg, Tim Swartz. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you love reading about the mysteries of the universe? Do you wonder what secrets are hidden in the shadows of our own planet? If so, you won't want to miss these two amazing books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll explore the world of the mimics of man, beings that can look like us but are not. They've been among us since the beginning of history, hiding in plain sight, influencing our culture in ways we can scarcely imagine. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll discover the so-called hard evidence of UFOs that's been available for study this entire time, but for the most part has been ignored. These two books will open your eyes to a hidden reality that has been right in front of our eyes all along. That's Mimics, The Others Among Us, and Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. Available now on Amazon.com.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.